You know what my favorite text is? A waypoint in the Onyx Hunt app to a goblin turkey. The list on the Onyx Hunt app features for chasing turkeys is long, but knowing exact public and private boundaries and land ownership details will help you find more places to hunt, whether that's on public or private. I'll be toting the Hunt app through the spring woods in a few states this year, and I recommend you do the same if you want more turkeys on your table. Also, Onyx has a special offer for you. Use code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your membership at onyxmaps.com/hunt this spring. Maui Nui is on a mission to help balance axis deer populations for the good of our environment, communities, and food systems on the island of Maui. They've shared over 126,000 pounds of nutrient-dense protein with the Maui community. Secure your spot now. Become a snack subscriber and join in helping to build more resilient food and ecosystems on Maui. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's MauiNuiVenison.com. And use promo code BEAR for 20% off your first order.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't let streaks or smearing on your windshield compromise your visibility. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see our selection. Our professional parts people will even install your new wiper blades while you wait. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
My name is Clay Newcomb, and this is a production of the Bear Grease Podcast called the Bear Grease Render, where we render down, dive deeper, and look behind the scenes of the actual Bear Grease Podcast. Presented by FHF Gear, American-made, purpose-built hunting and fishing gear that's designed to be as rugged as the places we explore.
Well, I'm very tempted to podcast out of my new saddle.
Very, very tempted.
I didn't want to start off. So I have in my office, you guys were at the Black Bear Bonanza.
Yes, sir.
A man named Colt George.
It's incredible.
Saddle, custom saddle maker, third generation custom saddle maker from Wyoming, who I had met one time in Wyoming, just shook his hand. He was like, hey, my name's Colt George. I met him and his dad. Mm-hmm. He's a third generation saddle maker. His dad makes saddles. His grandfather makes saddles. Colt's probably like, I don't know, his mid-20s, maybe late 20s.
Yeah.
When he saw me in Utah, he said, hey, Clay, I'm coming to the Black Bear Bonanza. And I was like, cool, man. And he said, I have something I want to give you. And I was like, great, great. Look forward to getting it. You know, people bring me books or just different stuff all the time.
Jelly.
So I was grateful, but I didn't think too much about it.
Did you know at the time he was a saddle maker then?
No. So then at the Black Bear Bonanza, I see him and he's wearing a big cowboy hat and I recognize him. I'm like, hey man, yeah, I met you. And he comes up to me and he's like, hey, sometime today you need to come out to my truck. And I was like, okay. And, anyway, long story short, I went out to his truck at the very end of the day. And he pulls this saddle out. Okay.
Oh, no.
Is this what you want to do? This is how you want to play is now in the saddle.
I'm in the saddle. And he gave me even this saddle stand. And this is what they call their hunting saddle.
It's super,
it has,
super
it
custom.
Has on the saddle horn, it's got an acorn. It's got four bear tracks. It's got a BG right here. It's got a barred owl feather.
Wow. And it's got...
And on the back of the
crowning jewel,
the back it has a plot hound treeing, but anyway,
it's pretty fancy.
It's
really
very fancy. And
I don't think any of us could take you podcasting out of it.
Well,
like, I think that would be too much for the room.
I will probably do a lot of podcasting soon. But he wants me to use it. Like, he's like, Clay, this is a saddle that I want you to use, but it's just so pretty. It's just sitting here in the office. So. That's that. We have a very a great crew of people here today. I've got to my right my brand new saddle, to my brand new saddle's right, Josh Lambridge, Spillmaker. And very special guest who we've not had on here before. We got to skip him first. Skipping over the very special guest to another very
special guest.
To a less special guest who's been on here a lot. Mo Shepherd. Everybody knows Mo. Mo is my go-to man for turkey stories, deer stories.
All kinds of stories.
Ozark, hillbilly stuff.
Yeah.
Black Panther stories, mountain lion stories, whatever you want.
That you got it all.
If I ain't got them, I'll make one.
Misty, did you know that Mo's... Let me just tell this story, Mo. Okay. You can correct me when it's wrong. Mo's great-great-grandfather, who there is a mountain named after that's on like a topo map over here, named after,
Shepherd
was
mountain.
Killed by Union bushwhackers under a bluff during the Civil War.
Yeah, I don't know if they were Union bushwhackers, but they were bushwhackers. Most bushwhackers weren't for either side. Oh, they were just out to
self-serving,
rob, pilfer, and steal, and get whatever they could get.
So. Got it.
Oh wow, I did not know that.
So he had gone to meet
his two sons that were on a furlough to come home for a few days. So I don't know where they'd been fighting, but they were on a furlough to come home for a few days, and he however they got their notes to each other by some way or another, or however they were going to meet at a bluff a few miles from where he was living at, where he had homesteaded up there, and he went and met them, took them some food and some more clothing and stuff, and they visited a while, and he got ready to leave and said, you know, we'll see you when you get out of the war, when the war's over, probably before I'll see you again. He walked out from under the bluff, walked up on top, and the bushwhackers shot him.
Mm. Wow.
Oh, man.
And run down and grabbed his stuff and took off with whatever he had left. And then his two sons got out and found him, and he was still alive. They took him to his wife and his daughter back by their house, and they cared for him, and the boys took out after the bushwhackers and found them both and killed them both. So
wow.
Wow.
Do you know exactly where that happened?
Yeah.
I mean, you know the bluff. Yeah, I mean,
I've got a picture of the bluff with my dad sitting under it.
Really?
On my phone.
Well. So Shepherd Mountain, and Mo was raised up there, and anyway, really unique history.
And him and his brother, when they first came in the, I think it was in the 1830s or something like that, the first place they settled was down on the Frog Bayou, and they found a spring there, and that place is still called Shepherd Springs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a lake there. Now they combined that lake with Lake Fort Smith, but it still has a lot of stuff in the Lake Fort Smith State Park about the Shepherd Springs and my great-great-grandfather settling there with other people. And then his brother stayed there, and then he moved up into the mountains and homesteaded up there, and that's how it got the name Shepherd Mountain. So
yeah.
Really Let's just cool. say cool. that you don't stumble on Mo Shepherd's house accidentally.
No.
No, you don't.
No.
We're still on introductions, though. To Mo's right, my lovely wife, Dr. Misty Newcomb. So great to have you.
Good to be here.
Our special guests, though, John and Demi Whittinghill from Oklahoma.
Yeah,
boy. Welcome.
Yep. I think Thank that we should us. Have them, you know, make a random animal sound just to...
Oh, we're going to save that. No, so I've met John and Demi a couple of times. Y'all came to the Warner Glenn film premiere, and then I met you just recently at the Black Bear Bonanza, or saw you again.
Yeah.
And, John, you work for Oklahoma, is it Game and Fish?
Oklahoma Department of Wildlife Conservation.
Okay. Yes, okay.
Yep.
The real reason you're here is because of your wife.
That's right.
Demi.
More famous than me.
Demi, can you greet everyone?
Okay.
Just, just say hello.
Oh, hi, everybody.
So Demi was, both of you guys were in the Owl Hoot competition.
Yes, sir.
And, but there was a video of Demi that I put out.
Yeah.
That I got from one of your friends had taken that video, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah, our pastor's wife, actually. She recorded it. She was there and...
Okay.
Send it to me. So
yeah.
So I put that video on my Instagram, and it has 1.3 million views. Mo, I've never put a video of you.
No,
that
you
got
never
1.3 million views.
I don't know if you've ever put a picture of me on there or not. I gotta think
you probably have to get you some long blonde hair.
For a long time, Mo Shepherd. I don't know why, but his picture was Clay's screensaver. It was Mo, and do you remember that?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It was like Clay put it up when he was first doing Arkansas Black Bear Stories.
Black Bear Stories and stuff, yeah.
And he saved it to us. He probably didn't know. He probably did it on accident and then never changed it. And so for years, the kids would be like, Look, there's motion. Every time Clay would open up his laptop, he'd be like,
yeah, it was a really good picture of you with a bear that you killed with a pistol.
Yeah.
There we go.
Any but presentations he did?
No. So what do you do for the Department of Wildlife in Oklahoma, John?
I'm an intern right now. So it's basically just kind of like interning for a technician role. So running a tractor, you know, planting food plots, doing control burns, any kind of habitat manipulation, just stuff like that. So running a road grader. So.
You got a real job.
Yeah, it sounds like a real job. Do you want to be in? You like working for? I mean, is it?
Yeah,
it's a good job.
It's great, man. Like I said, Demi and I and my family ran a business for about 8 years that we had that my dad left to us when he passed away, and it's been a refreshing change.
Nice.
You know, to get out and just kind of be out and outside. That's where I like to be. You know, my mom handed me some papers, you know, a couple months ago, and she said, here, these are from, you know, homeschooling way back in the day. And, you know, I went through there and looking at them and stuff, and it was like fish and wildlife biologist circled, game warden circled, you know, just military circled, you know. And so I did the military thing, you know, coming out of high school, and ended up getting hurt overseas. And then, you know, that kind of changed the trajectory of some of what I had planned.
Hmm.
And so, you know, now 12 or 13 years later, I'm starting over and probably going back to school for wildlife biology.
Oh, really? That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a shot, man. I'm not much of a school person. I'm more of a hands-on, you know, I like working with my hands, you know, running machines. I did heavy equipment school, you know, when I went through VoTech and stuff like that. And run a bulldozer. I know everybody's a big fan of Clay's bulldozer story.
Yeah,
he's a big bulldozer
incredible.
I've got one if you ever want to come run it. You know?
You have one yourself?
I do, certainly.
Wow.
Yep.
Do you like it?
I do.
Well, I wouldn't let him drive it.
Okay, there we go. Funny story, I had a big rat up under the seat the other day, and it about made me hit my head on the ceiling. Coming up out of there, I sat down, and he come out by my side, and boy, I shot out of that thing pretty quick. So I didn't want that crawling in my lap, but anyhow.
Way.
Where were you deployed in the military, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, Afghanistan. So that was back in 2011. Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Really? How long were you there?
About 6 months.
Six months.
Yeah, I got 6 months in and came back from leave from my sister's wedding and stuff like that, and hit an IED over there, and kind of a big deal. You know, broke my back and collarbone, shoulder, bust a few teeth, and a couple of my good friends, you know, died as well in that accident. So, or not an accident, but an IED explosion.
Wow.
So one other guy made it out, you know. But yeah, definitely at 19, that kind of shook my world a little bit. You know?
Golly.
So.
But, yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah. I didn't know that about you.
But it's not something I really share a whole lot. You know, like I said, I'm open to sharing it. Obviously, now everybody's going to know about it, but that's fine. You know,
we can take it off if you want to.
No. That's fine. Like I said, I'm an open book, man. Anything you want to know, just ask. Like I said, I'm happy to share. You know, I want people to – I don't want to be strutting around like I did something. I knew what I was signing up for, you know, when I volunteered. Nobody put a gun to my head to force me to go. You know, I wanted to, and I liked it, and you know, obviously those events, like I said, they still stick with you, but I'm working on trying to get that figured out, and Demi and I have had some, you know, issues as far as my stuff of being able to communicate what's going on inside my head, you know, I'm trying to be respectful of, you know, that and not share too much detail, but I've got some work I've got ahead of me still, you know, and this, I've been doing this for, you know, 12, 13 years now. Yeah. This is back in 2011.
Yeah.
So, it's a process, but, it's good, man. Life's good. So I kind of like where I'm at.
What a story, man.
Yeah.
No doubt.
And did they discharge you after that? Mm-hmm. Did you get honorably discharged?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah.
And came back and then you took over the family business.
Yes, ma'am.
Were y'all married?
No, we got.
When did y'all? How long have y'all been married?
6 years.
6 years. Okay.
Yeah, so the Black Bear Bonanza was actually our 6 year anniversary.
Yeah, okay.
So pretty good way to spend an anniversary, if you ask me. You know.
Yeah. And now you guys are big outdoorsmen and women.
Absolutely.
Now, Demi, what's your favorite thing to hunt? I've seen your Instagram, and I see you turkey hunt some and deer hunt.
Definitely turkeys.
Really?
I've done a little bit of everything with him, but my first successful hunt was with turkeys, and I was hooked.
Did you grow up hunting, or did John take you?
I didn't. But I always had a desire to. It's kind of weird. My parents never really understood why. I always had a fascination for hunting, and I always wanted somebody to take me. And
here comes John.
Yeah,
there we go.
We had known each other since we were real little. Yeah. And his sister actually saw a picture of me with a fish. I was bass fishing with my dad, and I said, "Yeah, now I just need somebody to teach me how to hunt." And she said, "Well, I know a guy," and she, you know, tagged him. He didn't say anything. It took
and stress, John.
While. Yeah, no, I'm a slow learner. I'm the subordinate gobbler off to the side. Yeah. You know, over
it
here that sneaks in the back door later.
You didn't
on.
Strut right in. You
no. The strutting turkey gets shot first.
Yeah.
So yeah, it took a little while, but then. And I think at first, maybe he thought, and a lot of other people thought, oh, she's just doing this because they're dating or whatever. I'm like, no, I'm really interested, and I'd really like to know, you know, the ins and outs of hunting. But turkey hunting turkey hunting and then duck hunting is probably my second favorite. Okay. But
she's big waterfowlers?
I am. I was ate up with it pretty bad for a couple of years there, and I still am. Like I said, I love to go. It's the thrill of the hunt, man. It gets me. I like birds, so, you know, I like shooting deer, but, you know, I don't shoot big deer. You know, I don't know how to kill big deer, but I know how to kill ducks and turkeys.
Yeah.
I'm just not picky, I guess.
Y'all grow up in the same community in Oklahoma?
Kind of. When we were little, our families were connected at church, and I stayed in contact with his sisters when I was a teenager. Okay. We moved to the East Coast, so
okay.
We stayed in contact just... through
I assume
sister.
You mean the east coast of Lake Worcester. No, the east coast of the U.S.
Yeah.
That was
a joke.
That was a joke. I was come on, team. That was funny.
That was a
micro geography joke.
Yeah.
The east coast of Lake Worcester. It's over there where they live, sort of, close.
Just south.
The east coast.
Yeah.
The east coast of the U.S.
Yep.
Okay.
So that's how we stayed in contact. And then... I remember his sister's wedding and him being there coming back from overseas, and he was just a wallflower. He just was on the side, and I'm out there dancing with his sisters and everything. But
he wasn't strutting.
Mm-mm, no. So just spitting and drumming.
Our parents were friends. They came up for, you know, family vacations. We, you know, stayed in contact that way. But I had a younger brother, and so he would run off with my brother and play, you know, when we were real little, and I would go off with his sisters. So.
Okay. Yeah. So y'all kind of knew each other.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
We went to church. I don't know if you said that or not. Went to church together when we were little kids.
Yep.
Little.
Yep. At what point did you start impersonating animals?
Great question.
There we go.
I don't know if in the industry we call it impersonating animals.
I would dabble just because he would do it a lot. And so I would try, you know, and I would even ask him, like, does that sound okay? Does that sound good? And he'd be like, it's okay.
But, I'm not the most encouraging word person.
Yeah.
Words of affirmation is not my strong suit.
Okay. You know, it's mine.
So, we're opposites in that area. And I'm learning that everybody has their own style.
Yeah.
And so just because it doesn't sound like mine doesn't mean it's bad, you know.
Now, had you been out in the woods enough to hear a barred owl?
I had heard owls, but I don't know that I heard a barred owl. Like I had heard them, you know, just out. I've actually heard one laughing before. So I had heard one like that. So I'm like, okay, that's what that really sounds like.
Have you heard her owl hoot yet?
Yeah, I listened to the.
Okay, your owl hoot is so realistic. Like, I figured you would have, like, listened to a lot of natural owls. You're saying you didn't.
No.
Really?
I think I blame it, too, on the fact that I studied music in school.
Okay.
Okay. So
okay.
Maybe it's okay. The ear, you know. Just,
interesting.
Yeah.
You're a fiddle player. Okay. We won't. She brought her fiddle.
Yeah.
But we're not going to embarrass her yet.
What's the use of bringing it if you don't play it?
Yeah, all right. Yeah. All right.
No, for real. So I was a judge in the contest, in the owl hooting contest. And we're blind judges. We don't have we're facing away so we can't see, or we don't know who anyone is.
Right.
And it was really funny because I remember somebody sitting right in front of me that was watching said, "Man, she's good." Like she said, she. And I, to be, I mean, I just assumed it was all men. You, I think maybe you had said you were going to owl hoot, but it didn't register to me that you were up there. But it, unfortunately, the guy that won at Cam, not unfortunately,
not
cut that out, Reva. Cam is he's incredible.
Yeah.
One day I'll have him on here.
Yeah.
He's really, really good.
But
you were like right there. So she ended up getting second place, which it's not an entirely fair contest. There's just three of us sitting up there listening and we're rating them, you know.
Yeah.
But no, I remember being surprised when somebody said, "She's really good." Because I just envisioned 10 men standing up there. I mean, am I right?
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. I mean, that's the way it's been the last few years.
You probably shouldn't say that.
That's right.
I'm just being honest.
I told Cam the other day, I was talking to him the other day, and I told him, I said, "You just better consider yourself lucky." He said, "Why is that?" I said, "Because I wasn't there."
Yeah.
He said, "Next year." I said, "Yeah, next year."
If Mo was there, you know, we might not be sitting here
right now.
That's true. You know,
well,
so.
It would have been a good, I bet y'all might have been the top three.
Yeah.
Ready to win Mother's Day and cement your reputation as the best gift giver in the family? Give the moms in your life an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos. She'll love looking back on these memories and seeing what you're up to today. Even better, with unlimited storage and an easy-to-use app, you can keep updating mom's frame with new photos, so it's the gift that keeps on giving. And this is not a joke. Juju Newcomb has an Aura frame, and we share photos, and they're incredible. Also, my mother-in-law has one. We have them. They truly are really good, really high quality. The Aura frame is easy to set up. It takes just 2 minutes to set up a frame using the Aura app. It also adjusts the display depending on light levels in the room to maintain the true color of your photos. For real, the digital screen is amazing. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame when you use code BEAR, B-E-A-R, BEAR. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code BEAR at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. Whitetail Institute launched the food plot revolution in 1988 with a concentration on research and real-world testing of forage products specifically for whitetail deer. Whitetail Institute's research and development team of agronomy experts provide effective, personalized service. I've been using Imperial Whitetail Clover for a long time in a food plot back behind my house. In 2007, I killed the biggest buck of my life over an Imperial Whitetail Clover small quarter-acre food plot. Imperial Whitetail Clover is the only clover scientifically developed through years of selective breeding. Clover Extreme genetic stability provides extreme cold tolerance, disease, and drought tolerance. It really does. Clover is coated with Whitetail Institute's Rain Bond, a polymer coating added for enhanced seedling survivability. They have an exclusive offer for Bear Grease listeners, 15% off Imperial Clover when you use the code BEAR at WhitetailInstitute.com. That's WhitetailInstitute.com and use code BEAR for 15% off. Sport Dog is the most recognized brand in the hunting dog training industry. Born in 2003 in Knoxville, Tennessee, Sport Dog was forged by a passionate group of hunters and dog trainers who intimately understood the challenges of the field and the special connection between hunters and their dogs. The people at Sport Dog know that having a well-trained hunting dog is more than just having a reliable partner. It's a commitment to their safety and unlocking their full potential. The Sport Dog promise to customers is simple: gear the way you design it. Every product Sport Dog builds is meticulously designed and rigorously tested in the field, ensuring it withstands the toughest conditions you and your dog may encounter. Trust Sport Dog, where innovation meets passion, to elevate your hunting experience and strengthen the bond with your local companion. Using tracking equipment on my squirrel and coon dogs is extremely important to me. To track my squirrel dogs and my one old coon dog that's not very good. Get 20% off your first purchase using the code BEARGREASE. Go to www.sportdog.com/BEARGREASE to learn more.
Now, you were in there too, John. You were up there in the top 10.
Yeah, I got so I got into the top 5, but
you made it into the top. See, I didn't even know who was up there.
Wow.
Yeah. So
you guys have enormous genetic potential.
Your children will be incredible out there.
They're probably going to live in the trees, you know. So we do live in the woods, so that's a possibility. Mm-hmm. So
that's funny.
But yeah, so I got into the top 5, but I think I was number 5 of 5. You know,
you'd probably been 6 if I'd been there.
I don't doubt it. You know, I lost to you once before, you know, so I wouldn't doubt
it. So you were in the year before, but not Demi.
Yeah.
Yep, that's right.
Okay. I remember him being there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, okay.
A year ago.
I was shaking, you know, up there on stage because I don't like being in front of people, you know. So I was trying to hold it together.
All right, well, we need to hear some out.
Yeah,
it's time. Who want, Mo, you should go first.
You really think I should?
You can stand up. You can do whatever you want.
I can hoot laying down, standing up.
It doesn't matter.
Lay down on your back. I'm just kidding.
You'll have to help me back up if I get down that far. I'm 63 years old, Misty.
Yeah, let's hear it. Let's hear it.
What do you want, a whole series or?
You're whatever. Here's what I've, as being a connoisseur of owl hoots.
Who, you?
People, I'm a connoisseur. That doesn't mean I'm the best. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying
I'm sure what connoisseur means.
Connoisseur means you just.
You know. Just,
a sampler.
You think you know stuff. That's what connoisseur is.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. No, everybody, the real good people, or a lot of people have one thing that's real good. Like they have a real good laugh or they have a real good tone. Or they have a real good sequence. A whole lot of it is timing. Mm-hmm. You can have somebody that does it good, but their timing is slightly off.
Okay.
And so, anyway, I'll be giving commentary on what you guys are all good at.
Okay.
Go ahead, Mo.
You ready to go, then.
That's good.
Very good.
Very good.
Mo has really good
tone.
Like it doesn't sound like a human.
Yeah. It doesn't. Yeah. Like I'm watching, I'm trying to figure out.
How are you doing that?
Like, are you using your belly?
Don't tell her, Mo.
Yeah, he's not using his throat.
He'd have to kill you if he told her.
Okay. She's going to try to eat her next year if you tell her.
Yeah.
Using the vocal cords.
So.
Your vocal, that's it.
All right, John, let's hear yours.
All right.
Yeah! Ooh! Ooh, 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 ooh,
beautiful.
I can't do that. The laughing part, that's my Achilles heel, man. I'm letting all my competitors know out there that's
don't show them your weakness.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
I think in the woods your owl hoot would be really good because it's loud.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you got.
Oh,
good...
did you want me to do a loud one?
You're super competitive with this, man. He's here to win.
Mo's like I wasn't there.
He's here to win.
I didn't know you wanted us to do a loud
one.
No.
I'm just looking for positive things to say here. Okay. No. That's good. All right, Demi, you ready?
I guess so. I'm caught.
This can't be more nerve wracking than owl hooting in front of.
I don't know.
1,200 people.
Yeah,
it might be more.
I don't know, huh?
I don't know.
Come on now.
Okay.
Perfect.
That was good.
That was good. What I think people were saying on Instagram the laugh, good tone. Good tone.
It does.
So I think she learned that, you know, from Gomer Pyle and Andy Griffith's show where he's eating that peanut butter sandwich outside and they're trying to warn Andy. Or when Andy's coming, you know, when they're all thinking they're getting married, they said, you got to keep your cheeks all holler, you know? So I think that's where Demi learned that.
Yeah. Mm.
Where,
nice.
Are we going to hear Josh's? Josh is musically trained. Come on.
Nope, not even going to try.
He could crack a whip probably pretty good with whipping that fly rod around, right?
Yeah.
Clay was the first person. I did not know that people could. I was just not at all raised around outdoorsy people like our hunters especially.
Really?
And I remember Clay and I were just friends, and he went out. We were out in the woods, and he started doing that, and an owl called back to him.
Hmm.
And it was like, hands down, the coolest thing I'd ever seen a guy
yeah.
do.
Yeah. Well,
that was the thing.
So he yeah, called. He called you in.
Man, huh? I was like, that is super cool. And I remember telling my friends, this guy can talk to animals.
Yeah. Well, I didn't grow up hunting either. And Clay's the one who taught me to hunt. And I remember hearing him owl hoot.
Yeah.
And me thinking, like, that's just something that owls do, but I'll never hear it. Right. And then mm-hmm. going turkey hunting, it was like, oh wait, there's owls out there, and they yeah. sound like that.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
It's super cool if you've had no exposure to it. It's kind of like a different world that you're being introduced to. And mm-hmm. yeah,
well, that's how a lot of my friends that are not at all
yeah.
in the hunting realm, they're like, okay, what is owl hooting? What is this thing?
Yeah, you know. After you had what's a viral point video, of this?
Yeah, yeah. They're like, I see the video. What is this about?
Yeah,
that's funny. Yeah. You know, the best practice that I've ever had is getting a owl coming in, and mm-hmm. I know you two have probably done it before, and just getting calling yeah. with one, just like that sitting right above
yeah.
you. Have you ever had them do that, John?
Try to mimic them.
Absolutely.
Oh, that would
make them mad.
You would probably your game next year would probably yeah. be way better, Demi, if
oh, yeah.
you could either
would love for that to happen
or just like listen to one online, and man, you can because yeah. Like for me to owl hoot right now, it'd just be okay. But if I was out and listening to one mm-hmm. and he was sitting mm-hmm. on a limb above me, like that's your best owl hooting. And then you kind of remember it.
Yeah.
That's but what Bear absolutely. Said last year. He went out in the woods and he said that just sitting there, two got into a little
yep. mm-hmm.
call fest and he recorded it. And as soon as he said coming home, he could immediately call better
yeah.
than
yeah.
He, just from like being in the woods and just sitting underneath the tree
oh, yeah.
mm-hmm. while they were calling back and forth. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. 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 Mo, you heard some turkeys the other day gobble?
Mm-hmm.
They're doing it, huh?
They're getting started a little bit up here in the mountains.
Yeah. yeah. John, have you heard any gobble?
I got some to gobble at me on the side of the road the other day.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
We were driving to go do a little fly fishing, and saw a group of, you know, a flock of about 20 turkeys and saw some little cigar butt jakes in there and started yelping at them, and they let loose. And
there you go.
I got my fill on that. So that was the first gobble of the season for me.
We were yeah. in Colorado last week on the way home. I looked over and I was like, is that what I think it is? And there were probably 60 turkeys out in this field.
Really? In Colorado?
Yep.
Where?
Yeah. Drop us a pin.
Oh, yeah, I'll send you a pin.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You got. I don't mind spot burning in Colorado. Spot.
Yeah.
What are the turkey, is the turkey situation in Oklahoma better than it is here?
A little bit.
That yeah. you would see them on the side of the road.
Right? Yeah, I would say so. So, I mean, when I was growing up, we used to have them come up in the yard. You know, there was a group, flock of, you know, 100 turkeys
wow.
around our house. And, mm-hmm. I mean, you'd come out, and we had like a little center, like an oval driveway. And, I mean, that whole patch of grass would just be covered
wow.
with turkeys. Mm-hmm. And
we would see them, too.
Yeah, it's definitely changed. It's sad, you know, to see them go. But, I mean, there's still a few around, but it's not the good old days
yeah,
like it was.
I started hunting in Oklahoma in 82.
Yep.
And I haven't hunted every year out there, but I've hunted a lot of years out there. And when I first started hunting out there, there was a lot of turkeys. I hunted yeah. in the southeastern part. I went kind of central part out towards Okmulgee and up mm-hmm. in there and hunted a little yeah. bit. Went plumb to the western part and hunted some. And I've seen it kind of stayed stable till about 2000, and
yeah.
it really started to decline, kind of like Arkansas did yep. in the early 2000s.
Absolutely.
So,
mm-hmm. yeah, there's pockets of birds still. So, I mean, like I said, where I work, there's birds, you know, around home. If you can find water and you can find the habitat, you can find the birds. So,
yeah.
it's just like I said, they're a little, you got to look for them.
Same mm-hmm. way here. They're in back in the 90s here, you could go about out at any ridge or listen off at any holler and you'd hear a turkey. Now you have to really look for them to find them, kind of like when I started hunting turkeys
yeah.
in 76 here in Arkansas, and that's the way it was then. You had to spend several days just finding turkeys. Once you found them, there was a pocket of you could hunt them, but you had to spend several days out just trying to find where the turkeys were.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the way it is now here in the northwest part of Arkansas anyway. So,
mm-hmm. yeah, absolutely.
I've heard some positive reports, though, coming from Arkansas, about a few more birds than there's been in the last few years.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah,
that is good.
I saw more young birds this fall deer hunting and stuff out where I do a lot of deer hunting, turkey hunting, both, and I've seen in 25 years.
That's good.
Flocks of young birds with hens grouped up. So
that's good. That's good.
I think knocking that season date back a little bit has helped. And then, you know, obviously Oklahoma used to be a three-bird state.
Right.
You know, and so they've knocked it back down to one now. And so I think that helps too. So
yeah.
And that's just my opinion. That's not anything from the wildlife department. You know, that's just
me
as a turkey hunter going out there and I'm, you know, finding and seeing some more birds.
Mm-hmm. You know? So we started our turkey stories episodes. We're going to do probably one more. These are some of my favorite podcasts that we do because I get to travel around and meet all these people and hear their stories. It's really hard. It's actually harder than it may seem, Miss Newcomb, to go talk to somebody and get their best turkey story that translates good on. Josh will tell you, he was looking at while I was doing some editing today. I'll talk to somebody for 45 minutes and get one story.
4 or 5 minute story.
Yeah, yeah. But Josh, of all the stories that were told today, and we had a good sampling from, we went down to Mississippi and then to Alabama and then to Tennessee. So we did a three-state tour on this one. There were no, I don't think there were any Arkansas stories.
In North Carolina, wasn't you?
North Carolina. Well, I had a North Carolina storyteller, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's a guy from North Carolina.
That's right, that's right. Yeah, that's right. So it's four states.
Good thing I remembered that.
Yeah, yeah. Which story stood out to you, Josh?
So there were two, and I'll tell you, one's quick. Macy's story, mainly because I like the end when she takes her turkey feathers and turns them into flies for fly fishing.
Oh, really?
She's like that. Quite the fly fisher. I've seen her.
So you knew of Macy Watkins?
Yeah, because she posts a lot of fly fishing stuff.
Did anybody else
follow
her? I followed her.
Did you know her before?
I just followed her on social media, but yeah.
Okay.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
So I liked that, but honestly, the story that stood out to me the most was the old gentleman who got shot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Because it reminded me of when we were turkey hunting, and we got lost for a large number of hours. And when we got back to camp...
Let's rephrase that, Josh. You were lost.
No, not me. But we found a turkey nest. You remember? That was quite a... We did get lost, but it was a lot of fun being out in the woods.
Was that with our kids, or was that a separate time?
No, that was just Clay and I.
Back
before Onyx.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But when we got back, you remember, a couple of guys had stopped by our camp because one of the guys that was hunting with us was a doctor. And... one of Gary Newcomb's old friends, John Mesko, and
so we had turkey camp. John Mesko was there. Dad, me, and Josh went off and got lost the whole day. Came back to camp, and they tell us.
And they're
story.
Like, the gentleman just came by because he had just gotten peppered by some joker. Just saw the white. He was an old man, had white hair, and just shot one off at him. Oh. And he took 17 pellets, almost in the same place. 17 pellets in the back of his ribs.
Wow.
Wow.
And, he, you know, there wasn't much they could do other than, you know, just let it heal up. And, but that, I appreciated the compassion with which the story was told in the podcast, just the level of concern for the gentleman to help him get over that. I mean, that has a way of being pretty traumatic
shot, it would be. You know?
And just the way they wanted to help him but didn't push him but created a really safe environment for him to kind of get past that. I thought that was really neat. That really spoke to me.
Yeah.
So good. David Joy, he's the guy that told that story. David Joy. He is a award-winning novelist.
Huh.
Oh, really?
And I love it when he talks because you would never guess that. He has a real Appalachian cool accent.
Yeah.
But yeah, he just got off a European book tour. His books are really famous in France. I mean, they're famous here. He does well here, but he don't know this. He didn't tell me this. Somehow I've read this, but in France he has a huge following. So he just got back from France. But like I said, he's like as country as cornbread. Huh. And anyway, David, he's a cool guy, but I have several of his books. This one's called When These Mountains Burn. They're a little dark.
Yeah, him telling that story, he sounded country. I mean, he sounded just like an old country boy who's telling it. So.
Yeah, but he's a neat guy. Neat guy. Which one stood out? Who wants to go next? Denny, which one did you like?
Yeah, I liked Jim's story. He just, I don't know, when I heard it, I'm like, well, that's a tearjerker, you know, finding his dad's journal and like turning to that.
Russ Arthur's.
That hunt. Yeah, like I don't know. And it actually made me tell John that, you know, I know for me, like I've had a lot of first hunts, you know, just like doing all different types of hunting. And I'm like, I really need to write these things down because like even in the moment, you know, it's so exciting. But then, you know, as years pass, you know, forget stories. And so I'm like, how cool would it be to have a journal and just have all your, you know, hunts and different things and then have your kids be able to read it and go back. And I feel like I'd be the same way as him. Like I might start reading it and be like, okay, I need to save this. I need to emotionally prepare myself and get away and, you know, read it. But that was just really, it was definitely a tearjerker.
I think he said there were 72
books.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
72 really?
Same,
books.
Same make and model.
Journals.
Oh, my goodness.
Can you, and what stood out to me about that is that, I mean, his dad, like Russ, is probably in his 60s. Russ Arthur's in his 60s.
64 by what he said.
Did he say 60?
Well, he told when he was born in 59.
Yep. So. I was going to say probably mid 60s.
I was born in 60. I'm 63. So
his dad probably would have been born in the early 40s or late 30s, something like that. I don't know when his dad was born. Point being, some of that generation was pretty. Private's probably not the right word, but I can't imagine me having 72 full journal books and my family not knowing about it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It seems like something that might from that generation have happened. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And Russ, holy cow. I'm going to do more stuff with Russ Arthur. He is a jewel of a man, truly is. But I met him. Did it make sense how I met him? I mean, he kind of, if you follow Bear Grease, I did that story on Louisdale and Charlie Edwards from my hometown.
Yeah.
It was so wild. But I was interviewing a law enforcement guy about Louisdale and Charlie, these two guys.
And, outlaws.
And he said, hey, do you want to interview the undercover agent that tried to catch Louisdale? And I was like, yeah. Well, it was Russ Arthur. And he said, well, he lives in Tennessee. And so I remember we had built the episode, and then I got this intel, and like the next day I like jumped in the truck and drove to meet Russ Arthur in Tennessee, and it was spooky because Louisdale's passed away. Louisdale had told people that he'd suspected all these years that this guy might have been an undercover agent, and he told people. He said, that guy was the best natural voice mouth caller ever heard. And then when I meet Russ Arthur, one of the first things I said was, let me hear your owl. Let me hear your yelp. Yeah. Let me hear your gobble. And he did it all. And none of these people back in my hometown knew this guy. They didn't even know he was undercover. I mean, we kind of busted his cover, you know, 25 years later. Yeah. It was okay. But they didn't even know for sure that he was undercover. Louisdale just always told him, he's like, I suspect that guy. So it was just interesting. And Russ has some wild, wild undercover agent stories, like blow your mind kind of stuff. But the real Russ Arthur is like a very dedicated turkey hunter, just a really good guy, really deeply embedded in Appalachia and that part of the world over there. And Russ actually hooked me up with the 92-year-old guy named Jack Hall, who told the emu story.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, Russ, super cool guy. But Russ is on the next episode, too. He has a cool story on the next episode, too.
Awesome.
Not to spoil the fun.
Foreshadowing.
I was just going to say, I thought it was, I did listen to that story. And when he said he didn't read it, that is not something I would have ever done. Like I thought that was
reading.
Oh yeah, I thought it was kind of wild. And like when he said I still haven't read it, I was like, hold on. You gotta go.
I think I would have read it too.
I think I would have read it for sure. Like I would have.
It was 10 years ago.
Yeah,
wow. He hasn't read any of them.
Really?
10 years.
Okay, yeah, I wouldn't wait that long.
Yeah. So you saying that someone has like all those journals and didn't, and his family didn't know it, I think that type of person would have a child who would know that there's a journal entry about his first time that he doesn't read. Like, yeah. I think there might be a family thing here.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was kind of fascinating to me.
Yeah. Maybe so.
I think you kind of got to emotionally prepare for something like that, too. And I mean, you could hear it in his voice when he said, you know, forgive me if I get choked up.
Yeah.
Like, that's some emotional stuff, man. You know, there's a bond there with your dad, you know, between a son and a dad that when they say something nice about you, it kind of chokes you up a little bit, you know. Yeah. So, and I think.
But you don't care about words of affirmation, so none of that matters to you,
well,
right?
I think that's maybe why I don't care about it sometimes, because my dad was not that way with me.
Yeah,
so I kind of learned to live without it. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it definitely, it gets to me sometimes, you know, when I think about stuff like that, for sure.
Yeah.
So.
Ready to win Mother's Day and cement your reputation as the best gift giver in the family? Give the moms in your life an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos. She'll love looking back on these memories and seeing what you're up to today. Even better, with unlimited storage and an easy-to-use app, you can keep updating mom's frame with new photos, so it's the gift that keeps on giving. And this is not a joke. Juju Newcomb has an Aura frame, and we share photos, and they're incredible. Also, my mother-in-law has one. We have them. They truly are really good, really high quality. The Aura frame is easy to set up. It takes just 2 minutes to set up a frame using the Aura app. It also adjusts the display depending on light levels in the room to maintain the true color of your photos. For real, the digital screen is amazing. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame when you use code BEAR, B-E-A-R, BEAR. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code BEAR at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. Whitetail Institute launched the food plot revolution in 1988 with a concentration on research and real-world testing of forage products specifically for whitetail deer. Whitetail Institute's research and development team of agronomy experts provide effective, personalized service. I've been using Imperial Whitetail Clover for a long time in a food plot back behind my house. In 2007, I killed the biggest buck of my life over an Imperial Whitetail Clover small quarter-acre food plot. Imperial Whitetail Clover is the only clover scientifically developed through years of selective breeding. Clover Extreme genetic stability provides extreme cold tolerance, disease, and drought tolerance. It really does. Clover is coated with Whitetail Institute's Rain Bond, a polymer coating added for enhanced seedling survivability. They have an exclusive offer for Bear Grease listeners, 15% off Imperial Clover when you use the code BEAR at WhitetailInstitute.com. That's WhitetailInstitute.com and use code BEAR for 15% off. Sport Dog is the most recognized brand in the hunting dog training industry. Born in 2003 in Knoxville, Tennessee, Sport Dog was forged by a passionate group of hunters and dog trainers who intimately understood the challenges of the field and the special connection between hunters and their dogs. The people at Sport Dog know that having a well-trained hunting dog is more than just having a reliable partner. It's a commitment to their safety and unlocking their full potential. The Sport Dog promise to customers is simple. Gear the way you design it. Every product Sport Dog builds is meticulously designed and rigorously tested in the field, ensuring it withstands the toughest conditions you and your dog may encounter. Trust Sport Dog, where innovation meets passion, to elevate your hunting experience and strengthen the bond with your local companion. Using tracking equipment on my squirrel and coon dogs is extremely important to me. To track my squirrel dogs and my one old coon dog that's not very good. Get 20% off your first purchase using the code BEARGREASE. Go to www.sportdog.com/BEARGREASE to learn more.
Which story stood out to you, John?
Honestly, I got two. I won't go too long because Josh kind of already hit on it, but that... David's story, you know, about his friend getting shot. John dumping his dirty laundry out here on the Bear Grease podcast. But I had a good friend of mine also that got shot and killed in a friendly fire accident right in front of me.
In the military?
Mm-hmm. Same deployment, same thing. Wow. And that's a scary thing to me, you know, to be around somebody I don't know with a firearm, you know. And it's not that I'm scared of guns, you know, that I carry them daily and, you know, they're tools and, you know, responsibly used. That's what they're intended for. But, yeah, anytime I get around, you know, a group of duck hunters, a group of turkey hunters, if a gun's sitting on the table at turkey camp, like, I'm checking it, I'm looking at it, I'm making sure it's unloaded. And I, you know, duck hunting, I usually make sure I'll watch them shoot before I'll shoot. You know, I got some hunting buddies that, you know, they're kind of like, why aren't you shooting? I'm like, I'm just watching here for a second, you know, just to kind of make sure. But, yeah, I appreciated the compassion and the understanding that the wife and the friend had by extending that to him and just being patient to let that kind of wound heal. But I also thought about podcast 66, you know, with Leon Boyd, the Hicks from the Sticks, where he talks about...
He even knew the number of the episode.
I know, buddy, right?
I wrote notes this morning.
He's kind of a big fan.
I've been listening since day one, man. So back in the Bear Grease magazine days.
Right on.
So, the quote that he said, I'd rather leave this old world right here coon hunting as in the best hospital in the world. I enjoy these woods, and I like to see youngins like Shepherd enjoy hunting. There's a lot of things in this old world that ain't near clean a sport as coon hunting is.
Mm.
And
that's a high level comment. He's taking something from episode 66 weaving it in episode 198. I don't know what episode.
After
this.
I listened to the podcast,
good
I just purged
good
it
job.
From my mind.
Yeah. I know what episode this is too, and I got a present for y'all later that I'll dish out. So,
Bo, did you do anything like that?
No.
Man, did you do anything special?
There we go.
I got it up here.
Yeah. So,
not trying to interrupt you, John. Go ahead.
No, you're good. You know, that David said, you know, that it's good medicine to be in the woods.
Right.
And I resonated with that. You know, that's kind of where I've gone. It's to the woods, you know, and not sharing my feelings all the time and just kind of getting out there with yourself and God and just sitting out there and being alone, you know, or, you know, with a friend or your wife or whatever like that. And I'm at the stage of life where I kind of like watching my wife do stuff and enjoy the things that I like to do more than I like doing them now. And that kind of ties into my second one there with Billy Johnson and the Clay Matthews, man. I got chills when I heard that.
Yeah.
Just that's kind of the life that I'm looking for these days. You know, man, living off the land, simple life, you know. I thought it was incredible. Again, it's woodsmanship, but, you know, knowing where the mulberry trees are to know where to find those turkeys, you know, that's pretty neat. Watching the hornet's nest to see how high they are off the ground, tell how bad the winter is, rubbing the squirrel hair. You know, that I'd love to sit down with a fella like that and drink a cup of coffee. I mean, like the stories that they could tell, you know, walking to sell his furs, you know, doing all that. And again, like I said, the blue yodeler story was neat, you know, because like I said, you get that involvement, you know, with that animal, and it means so much to you. But it just, you know, at the end of the day, the killing of the animal is not the thing for me anymore. It's just the enjoyment of being out there. And I can tell from that, how that guy talked about Clay Matthews, that he loved what he did. You know, the world changed all around him, but he didn't know any different because he just kept on doing his thing. That says contentment to me. That says, you know, that he's just okay being who he is. And that, like I said, I got kind of choked up thinking about that, you know, like that's a pretty good way to live. I like that a lot. So,
man, that story was interesting to hear Billy Johnson tell, because again, it was kind of there's always more than what we edit down.
Yeah.
And he started off the story like real quick by saying there was this old man that lived on the river named Clay Matthews. He was a lamplighter. Da, da, da. Yep. And he starts telling me the story, And then he starts talking about the blue yodeler, and I was confused. I was like, what about the guy on the river? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I was thinking in my head as he was talking. And then he tells this turkey story, and then he goes back to Clay Matthews. Yep. And by the time he's done, you realize that he can't talk about turkey hunting without talking about Clay Matthews.
Yeah. Clay Matthews had nothing to do with the blue yodeler.
Yeah, it had nothing. But in Billy's mind, and Billy's an older guy. I don't know. Billy's probably in his 60s, too, maybe older than that. I don't know. But he had a real – he had an agenda, like, in a good way, like when he started telling that story.
Yeah.
Like, the story was about Clay Matthews.
Yes.
There just happened to be his own personal little turkey story in there, you know. And I thought it was really cool. And the fact that we've done quite a bit of stuff on the Mississippi River, it was really cool hearing about, he was a lamplighter on an island, which, so the Mississippi River is, they've marked the channels since the 1800s, maybe even the middle 1800s. Oh, $30,000 for conservation.
Hot dog.
Was that a microwave, John?
Yeah. Microwave burritos.
No, you're supposed to tell them it's not. People think that it's a microwave. No. People think we're cooking burritos.
Yeah.
People think that. I had a guy write me a. Well, we're going to get back to Clay Matthews. I had a guy write me a very detailed instructions the other day of how to change the battery on my laptop.
Oh, good.
Because they thought it was a laptop. They thought it was a Garmin dog thing, saying my dog was treed.
Yeah.
Anyway, I like it. I like it all so much. I'm just going to let it keep beeping.
Yeah. It's Clay Matthews. It's part of the DNA, just like Clay Matthews and the Blue Yodeler.
It's part of the big story, the beeping, mysterious beeping. They mark the channels on the river so that the boats, like the river might be a half mile wide, but maybe there's only, you know, 200-yard stretch where you could drive a big boat where it's deep. And so they had floating kerosene lanterns that somebody kept like for like 1,000 miles up the river. And this guy, Clay Matthews, was a lamplighter on the Mississippi River.
That's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And lived on that island. It was cool.
Yeah. We live on the Arkansas. And so we got big barges coming up and down all the time.
Can you see the river from your house? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So it's fascinating to me. I mean, I can't see the bank with a nice duck light, you know, let alone a kerosene lantern. You imagine that?
Golly.
I mean, that'd be wild.
Yeah, that was a good story, man. I love that story. Yeah, and he did a good job too of describing how he woke up the next day and was kind of sad that he couldn't chase that turkey. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it was cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
Mo, which one did you like?
I really liked the one we all were just talking about, Billy Johnson and the Clay Matthews deal. All that went together when you finally got to the end of it. Then you realized how all that, like you said, tied together. How Billy Johnson tied everything he talked about turkey hunting, anything he related to Clay Matthews, because that was his life. You know, that's he learned so much and picked up so much stuff from him there on the Mississippi and doing that. And then the other story I liked was I just forgot the guy's name.
The Roy Stubbs, Russ Arthur,
the one, it was the next to last story, I think it was.
Yeah, Roy Stubbs, the older guy,
the older guy that worked for the gas company in Mississippi. Yeah,
yeah.
I really liked his story because I relate to that a lot. For all the years I've been turkey hunting,
missing, yeah,
some of my fondest memories missing or not getting a shot, a turkey getting away.
Yeah,
I've had some really good hunts that it ended in either a missing a shot or not getting a shot at all at a turkey. And it's the same way with deer hunting too, but especially on turkeys, it seems like that you remember that stuff when it goes like you don't plan for it to go, but it still sticks in your mind, and it's a great hunt because of everything that happened through the whole episode of the hunt and everything. So those two stories I really like. I mean, they were all pretty good, but if I picked two out, that would be those two right there. So.
Yeah. And that Roy Stubbs gentleman, I had never met him before that day, didn't know anything about him. I'd called Billy Johnson, who runs that museum, and if you're ever near Leland, Mississippi, you really should go there. It's top notch for what it is. And I just said, Billy, I need turkey stories. And he said, be here at 9 o'clock on this day. And I show up and he's got three guys there, and one of them is Roy Stubbs. So I mean, I didn't know this guy from Adam.
Wow.
Sat down with him, and it became clear real quick. Like, people just carry something. Like, everybody has something intangible that they bring to a conversation, or when they're talking about something, they just bring something. And he just had, like, incredible respect for the turkey.
Yeah.
You know, like, he in his little preamble, I kind of asked these guys, like, give me a little bit of history about yourself and your hunting. And he told about when he got started, and there weren't many turkeys, and then there were a lot of turkeys. But then he said, turkeys are really special. And if you get to hunt one, you should thank the Lord. Mm. It was just like super genuine.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people say stuff like that, but when he said it, it was like, I think this guy really means it.
Yeah.
And then I thought it was really funny when at the end he said he was sure that turkey was in turkey heaven.
Yeah.
Which I thought that was
funny.
It was he said it as a joke. He knew he was joking, but he said it. It was funny the way he said it, but he was a neat old guy.
That sounds like the place I'd like to be.
Yeah, he seemed like he had a lot of respect for the wild turkey. I mean, just as a game bird and out there, because this way he talked about the whole episode.
Yeah,
he talked through to the end when he was, you know, laying on his belly, and when he shot and didn't have his head down on his gun good, he figured what happened, and when the turkey flew over his head, it was like, This don't get no better than this. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's neat.
Yeah. You know, I think to me, they were all special. I liked that the old man, 92-year-old Jack Hall, when he had one turkey story to tell, and he actually told me a couple. I whittled through them, but he's killed hundreds of turkeys. Yes. He really has. There was an article about him in the National Wild Turkey Federation magazine that I read before I interviewed him. He was Russ Arthur's friend. But the story that he wanted to tell was about when he tricked his old buddy.
brought in some.
Yeah, I just thought it was a good story. But
oh, yeah.
All those on this episode, there were quite a few older fellas, other than Macy Watkins, who's young, and but all the old guys actually had to cut it out because it you know, when you're building an episode, you don't want it to be too repetitive. But almost every one of them told me the same story. There used to not be any turkeys, and then there were. And they would talk about how their dads didn't turkey hunt because there weren't any turkeys. And then when they kind of came of age in the 50s and 60s, there started being turkeys.
That's interesting.
And then, and I kind of alluded to it in the podcast and some of when I was talking, but it's interesting now to be a part of a turkey decline. And Mo, there's everybody's hit a little bit different. Like the turkey decline in Arkansas pretty much shut me down for 10 years. Mm. Like turkey hunting was not like my number one focus in hunting. Like I was probably more focused on bear and deer, but always turkey hunted. And I've turkey hunted every year of my life since I started turkey hunting. But like the turkey, the point of this what I'm saying here is that wildlife numbers declining actually affect people. Point being, for the last 10 years, I've kind of opted out of being very serious about turkeys just because the places I used to go don't have them anymore. And so my sons and daughters, they have not grown up with a real rich turkey story. Even though we've done some pretty good youth hunting, Mo's been with us on some of them, but it just makes you appreciate having wildlife.
Yes.
Like I don't realize sometimes how special it is what we have in North America. I mean, we just wake up and it's like what we have. If you're in rural America and you want to hunt, you've got access. But for me, the turkey hunting decline in Arkansas, as deep a dive as our turkeys took, and hopefully they're coming back. I mean, it kind of takes the fire out of you.
Yeah. Mm. And I mean, I said earlier, the when I first started in 76, there was turkeys, but there wasn't a lot of turkeys. I mean, up in this area, I heard people talk about in the Washtenaws, there was a lot more mountains back then in the 60s and through the 70s. But when I started in the mid 70s, like I said, you would go out. Our season was a month long. It was the full month of April. It went from April 1st to the end of April. And whatever days you got to go hunt, even before season scouting, you didn't hear much. But when you found a pocket of turkeys, you'd hear some gobbling, you could go hunt them. And there wasn't near as many hunters back then.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'd say there was probably a fifth of the hunters back when I first started as there is now, as far as hunters. But in the last, what you said a minute ago, Clay, in the last 10 years, I've seen those same turkey hunting hunter numbers seem like they've declined just because the turkey population has shrunk here in Arkansas. And a lot of people say, I ain't even going to go turkey hunting here in Arkansas because they're hard to find, and I'm just going to go fishing, or I'm going to do this or do that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, ignorant, hardcore people like me, I spend the whole month chasing them around whether there's any out there or not, because I love to do it. I love to turkey hunt. So.
Yeah.
But I've seen the ups
usually
and downs.
Find some.
Yeah, I usually do. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of miles going under these old boots and feet in that time to find them, too. So.
Mm-hmm.
So many people got spoiled, like I said, in the 90s and early 2000s. They didn't have to go scouting nothing. Just go out two or three days before the season, find a few turkeys, hear them gobbling. Last few years, I've killed a couple of big turkeys that I never heard gobble before the season or anything. I killed one that I've got mounted, the only turkey I've ever mounted. The only reason I went in there is because I was deer hunting in there the fall before, and I found a big old huge track on an old logging road in there. And I didn't even go back there before the season or anything. And I hadn't had no luck. I hadn't killed a bird all season. And I told my wife, I said, I'm going to go back over there where I was deer hunting. I said,
where you saw a turkey track.
Where I saw a big turkey track. And she kind of laughed at me.
Hmm.
And until I come home that day with that big old bird that I've got mounted now.
So. There we go.
Right on.
But the challenge, I feel like, makes it more exciting. I mean, for me at least, because I know the first two seasons I hunted with John, I didn't get on a bird. And I think the second year, actually, I wasn't able to go hunting. But the third year, I've spent – and the one story about how he said, I don't know what I'm going to do now. It's like I hunted for, 24 days? I forgot what he said.
Yep, 21 days.
Okay, so I didn't hunt that long on my first turkey, but the first one that I got was like – Five or six days straight. And I was like so bound and determined by the end of it. And that was the other thing when Macy was talking about being just like, just done. And like, you know, it was raining and everything. It was just the same kind of thing. But I remember like after I got that first one, I was like, wow, like that was, you know, there was so much build up to that point.
Mm-hmm. You had to work for it.
Yes. And it was just like, oh, wow, now that it's done, it's like, you know, it was kind of fun when it was, you know,
the chase.
Yeah, the cat and mouse thing there for a while. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it kind of makes it more exciting though when it's not so easy.
Yeah.
Ready to win Mother's Day and cement your reputation as the best gift giver in the family? Give the moms in your life an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos. She'll love looking back on these memories and seeing what you're up to today. Even better, with unlimited storage and an easy-to-use app, you can keep updating mom's frame with new photos, so it's the gift that keeps on giving. And this is not a joke. Juju Newcomb has an Aura frame, and we share photos, and they're incredible. Also, my mother-in-law has one. We have them. They truly are really good, really high quality. The Aura frame is easy to set up. It takes just 2 minutes to set up a frame using the Aura app. It also adjusts the display depending on light levels in the room to maintain the true color of your photos. For real, the digital screen is amazing. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame when you use code BEAR, B-E-A-R, BEAR. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code BEAR at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. Whitetail Institute launched the food plot revolution in 1988 with a concentration on research. and real-world testing of forage products specifically for white-tailed deer. Whitetail Institute's research and development team of agronomy experts provide effective, personalized service. I've been using Imperial Whitetail Clover for a long time in a food plot back behind my house. In 2007, I killed the biggest buck of my life over an Imperial Whitetail Clover small quarter-acre food plot. Imperial Whitetail Clover is the only clover scientifically developed through years of selective breeding. Clover Extreme genetic stability provides extreme cold tolerance, disease, and drought tolerance. It really does. Clover is coated with Whitetail Institute's Rain Bond, a polymer coating added for enhanced seedling survivability. They have an exclusive offer for Bear Grease listeners, 15% off Imperial Clover when you use the code BEAR at whitetailinstitute.com. That's whitetailinstitute.com and use code BEAR for 15% off. Sport Dog is the most recognized brand in the hunting dog training industry. Born in 2003 in Knoxville, Tennessee, Sport Dog was forged by a passionate group of hunters and dog trainers who intimately understood the challenges of the field and the special connection between hunters and their dogs. The people at Sport Dog know that having a well-trained hunting dog is more than just having a reliable partner. It's a commitment to their safety and unlocking their full potential. The Sport Dog promise to customers is simple. Gear the way you design it. Every product Sport Dog builds is meticulously designed and rigorously tested in the field, ensuring it withstands the toughest conditions you and your dog may encounter. Trust Sport Dog, where innovation meets passion, to elevate your hunting experience and strengthen the bond with your local companion. Using tracking equipment on my squirrel and coon dogs is extremely important to me. To track my squirrel dogs and my one old coon dog that's not very good. Get 20% off your first purchase using the code BEARGREASE. Go to www.sportdog.com/BEARGREASE to learn more.
Do you call? Do you turkey call?
Yeah, but I use a box call usually. But I'm going to use my slate call from Brent that he gave me.
So. Oh, yeah. Did he give you one?
Yeah, he did.
Oh, okay. So, okay. Yeah. Will y'all go hunt anywhere other than Oklahoma?
Yeah, so we've had a camp, or my family has had a camp in Missouri. My great-grandfather bought a place up there, I think, maybe back in the 30s, something okay. like that. And so it's been in the family for a long time. And so back in the, I mean, when I was a little kid, you know, probably back in 96, 97 or so, we started going up there, you know, in suburbans and, you know, camping in tents and stuff. And we had, you know, 2x4s nailed to the trees for shelves and stuff like that. And we'd always drive past this little cabin up there and busted out windows, floor sagging, you know. My great-grandfather built it for his ranch hand, you know, years and years ago. And so one year we went up there and it rained for 5 days straight and everything was sopping wet, you know. Our tents were soaked, you know, all clothes were soaked. And I'm like, why are we not sleeping up in that cabin? And, you know, we had a guy from Kentucky that was hunting with us. And said, I ain't sleeping up in that cabin. There's ghosts in there. And they got, I can hear those chains rattling up there right now. You know, his name is old Larry Moore. So anyhow, long story short, we redid the cabin. And so we got a little camp up there now. And that we go up there at least for
so
a week.
Fun.
Every year, it's very
you hunt
very
with them up there.
Yeah,
Demi?
Yeah, I love going there. That was the first time I went out. It was just like, wow, it's so peaceful out here, and there's, and you can hear them gobbling all around, and that was my first experience of turkey hunting. But it's pretty neat.
We actually have plans to go hunt with Cam, the winner of the Owl Hoot.
Okay. Oh, is that right?
Competition. Yeah, we just exchanged numbers there and. I think we're going to go hit that first week of season. Maybe hit
some
public.
Cool.
That's awesome.
If we get our butts kicked, we'll go to the place in Missouri on private and try to get him a bird there. So like
cool,
I said,
cool. Well, Cam has two of Josh Spillmaker's handmade raccoon skin hats.
I don't know if I got what it takes to win them, but Demi might.
Yeah. Demi, for real.
I had my eye on it.
You need to train.
Her head's like, itching. She can feel it.
I want to hear like your regiment for like how many owl hoots a day.
Yeah. 10,000 hours.
Yeah. There we go.
and like listen to recordings.
I'll keep
and
a journal.
Didn't, you know what? Yeah. When I did that, that one of the first couple of Bear Grease episodes was about, I think, I can't remember the name of it, the thing about.
Thing about owl hooters.
The yeah. thing about yes. owl hooters. Yeah. And it was
good
about.
I remembered that stuff.
Well, you owl hoot on it?
Yeah, you yep. called me and said you wanted me to be on it.
Okay, so. Yeah. Well, no, I met with a voice coach. I yeah. interviewed a voice guy that trains actors and singers and
really
and the rain in Spain.
I'm gonna have to listen to that.
Listen to that episode. Listen to that episode.
She's listened to it before. So.
I have.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think it's episode 2 or 3.
Yeah, it might have been to you.
Episode oh, okay. 2 or 3.
Yeah, it was two. 2 or 3.
Anyway, the guy. I interviewed him. It was online, and he said, "Let me hear you owl hoot." And so I owled at him, and he said, "Keep he." Watched me and he gave me instruction on what to do, and it actually helped.
Yeah,
he said you need to keep your tongue lower. Mm-hmm. He was from New York City. He didn't know yeah. a thing about what an owl sounded there, like. Yeah, Pace Picani.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
anyway, so you could take this serious, Demi.
This is how Clay talks to our kids. Like he talks
when
to
I see potential.
When he sees like he's having Shep right now, he's like, "Shep, you got to work out. You got to like." He's constantly telling Shep what he's got to do. So he basically
John,
sees potential for you to be, you know, a legendary.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna put in the work next yeah. year.
She got a taste.
She's got your homework
trouble.
Assignments.
Nah.
You're in trouble. You got. You think you got her?
I told you when I was planning on going up there that I had a couple of secrets I'd been working on.
Oh,
I didn't show them a while ago.
You didn't show them today.
Oh, you've been
okay,
working
hold
too.
Back.
Okay.
Okay.
I was planning on winning it this year, so.
There we go.
Oh, man.
All I'll say is that it took me a while to figure it out, but when you can sound like 2 or 3 owls at the same time.
Yep.
Ventriloquist. Hey, let me tell you this hot tip, and I don't know if I'll be a judge next year. If we start getting real serious with it, I don't know that I'll be a judge. But I think it's a trend to start with a screech.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's definitely. I don't know that that's the way to go.
See, that's something I can't do. I've tried and tried, and I can't get that high sound out of my throat.
So. It's kind of hard to do. Yeah.
I think the if Cam were here, the winner, who's an incredible owl hooter,
absolutely.
I would say I'm more interested in the basics.
Okay,
I would like to hear a laugh and all that as an afterthought.
Oh,
because the basic, even like 3-note, 4-note hoot being real tight. To me, is what makes it
mm-hmm. the trill one. Does it for me at the end.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Is that important?
It is.
Because for me, it's hit or miss. I can't seem to.
Can you do it sometimes though?
Yes, sometimes.
Well,
I
then
can.
Keep practicing.
Okay, Demi, here's your new homework.
That's what
assignment.
Gets me yeah. every time when I hear that.
No, that is something that as a judge I'm listening for. If somebody can trill, it's like, oh, yep, mm-hmm. It's
yeah.
Like,
I like that. That sounds good.
Yeah.
I can't do a trill.
I know.
Some guys can.
Yeah. And there's times I will get it like that, and when I'm not trying. I'm like,
and it just comes out.
See, you got the potential,
yep.
though.
Yeah.
So you got to keep working.
I think
it.
It's good to know how to roll your R's. Like, if you can roll
yeah.
your R's, then.
Like in Spanish.
So yeah. I use then my you uvula when I trill.
Can you trill?
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, a little.
I can't. Ooh. I need a drink of water here. Hang on now.
That's
pretty
what
good.
It sounds like.
Pretty good. This is what it's like, just like waking up in April at our house.
Yeah, there we go.
Super stressful if you're not a morning person.
Yeah.
Clay and Bear going back and forth.
There we go.
I feel that. I'm not a morning person, which is funny because he always would make fun of me saying that I was a night owl.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, or like, you know, it'd be when we were first married, like I'd be wanting to have a conversation late at night. He's not a night owl. Mm-hmm. He's a morning person.
I'm so a pawpaw.
He would joke and say, 10 o'clock, time to talk. Like, that I was just like that. And I'm like, sorry. It's just how I am. My mind is like full
deep,
throttle.
Deep conversations at 10 o'clock.
You're like, can we do this in the morning at 5 a.m.
Yeah.
over coffee?
When I'm ready. I'm ready to go at 5, you know, so.
I think I'm ready to talk anytime. Right, Misty?
Well,
always
I
available.
Mean, Clay falls asleep in like 30 seconds. Uh-huh. And I'll be like, hey, by the way, I mean, to me, we haven't disengaged from our last conversation and he'll be asleep. And I'll say, hey, by the way. And he's like, oh my gosh, you just woke me up from a dead sleep. And I'm like, there's no possible way I could be in a mild sleep, much less a dead sleep at that time. Hey, I've got a funny story for Josh because he was talking about Macy with her flies. Clay Bear told me this week. He said, I need to go to work making some flies. And I said, yeah. He said, I'm wanting to put in some special edition Tim flies. Tim is our squirrel dog. And he plucks hair from Tim to make, flies.
Live animal. And there's an animal still alive.
And he's like, I need to make sure I have to
do those. Freeze to death
special edition Tim.
He's going to have bald patches on him.
Yeah. So if you see that, we'll know. Tim's okay. Just Bear's been flying ties.
Flying ties.
Time flies.
There we go.
My wife can't ever say it right the first time. She always says, oh, you're going to go fly some ties? Yeah, babe, fly some ties.
Fly some ties.
It took me a second to even realize I did it.
Yeah, that does sound like a t-shirt.
Well, I'm going to Mississippi next week, turkey hunting.
Awesome.
Yeah, looking forward to that.
How's the Mississippi turkey population?
Way better than here. It's better.
Okay.
It's better. Hey, this is for all the folks out there, if you live anywhere in the world, you could come to the Meat Eater Live Tour.
Oh, yeah.
Which starts on April the 23rd and runs through May the 5th. Mm. But we'll be out west. And, man, it's wild that Meat Eaters never come to the south for a live tour or the Midwest.
They've been to Dallas.
On a live tour? No.
I think so, before
Kansas
COVID.
City. Kansas City.
Yeah.
Okay, I thought they were in
Kansas
Dallas
City.
Pre-COVID.
But we're going to be in Arizona, California, Idaho, Washington, Oregon, Utah.
How long's the drive to Washington? I'll come see you.
Long ways.
But Steve said
but
they're
you can buy tickets to the Meat Eater Live Tour right now. And it's going to be a lot of fun. So don't you think they should go, Josh?
I think they should.
Yeah, just if they're, you know, if you're within, I would say if you're within 15 hours drive of there, you should go.
Absolutely. No question.
That's worth a joke. It was a joke, Misty. Yeah, Meat Eater Live Tour. The other thing that you can check out is Brent and I's Mississippi River Expedition film.
Mm. Which I have is not out. Watched it yet.
You haven't watched it yet,
I know,
Josh?
I'm sorry. I've been on vacation.
Oh, wow.
I immensely enjoyed that. That was good.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Neat. Yeah.
It really
250 miles in a boat.
250 miles.
That's impressive.
I needed a vacation from Bear Grease.
Come on, Josh. You look like you're looking for something.
They were in Dallas.
Oh, wow.
In 2019.
She's proving you wrong.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's all. I'm just doing some research.
In 2019, they were in Dallas.
Just doing some research.
Don't go toe-to-toe with Dr. Newcomb.
Demi. Do you want to hit us with a fiddle tune?
Oh, yes.
I mean,
absolutely.
I gotta follow the lead of your husband here. He's saying you should do it.
Uh-huh.
Let's hear it.
She's good at it.
Let's hear it.
This is very normal for Bear Grease.
Just a little ditty.
Can you get it for her, John?
I'd love to.
We need some music. Off here. We've not had any in a while.
Now, what kind of...
I wish I wasn't alone in this.
You play the fiddle, not the violin.
Well,
both. I was classically trained, so...
Whoa.
But I had a friend in high school that actually, he approached me, handed me a CD. He was real introverted, but and real smart. He just started playing the banjo one day, and he handed me a CD of like 50 songs, and he said, you need to listen to these and learn them because we're going to start a bluegrass band.
Okay.
And I said, I don't know about that. I don't really play. He's like, well, you're going to love it. It's going to be great. And so we did. We had a bluegrass band and Deer Creek Redemption. I loved it. It was the most fun, actually, that I played music. So I don't know if this is even in tune.
Close.
So
close enough.
You can take your time. We can edit it out if you need a minute. So what is the, I think I know the answer to this, but maybe not everybody does.
Okay.
Tell us the difference between classical violin and fiddle.
It really comes down to style mostly. But there are things that you can do to adjust the instrument to kind of make it more, you know, lean more towards like that style.
So there's something you can do to the instrument, or yeah. it's the cadence and the style of play, yeah, and the type of music
and how you're holding it, and okay. just like yeah. That
Did you say the
thing.
Bridge has something
yeah,
to do with it too?
Sometimes people will have different levels of the bridge, and then also a lot of fiddle players that I've talked to have like steel strings.
Huh. Okay,
interesting.
So, but for the most part, I mean it's basically the same instrument.
Okay.
So,
man, just think if we'd all practice a song together,
know.
We could play.
It'd be mm-hmm. meaningful.
You know, Misty's a banjo player.
I know.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
I'm like,
we should have talked. We should have planned
next time.
Public tuning is.
What are you gonna play?
Unbearable to me.
I don't know. I might play a little.
You don't know Old Slewfoot, do you?
Ooh.
That song?
I don't.
Oh, okay. Don't worry about it.
I'm trying to think of something that I could just play by heart.
She's
a
pro. Bring that.
She's
you
a
know,
pro.
I might embarrass myself.
I am
myself.
Very rusty.
I don't want to owl hoot. I might embarrass myself.
I'm so. Very rusty. I played for a long time and then I put it down and didn't play it for a long, long time. Yeah. So yeah.
Right on. That's awesome.
That was awesome.
Very cool.
Very good.
Very good.
Have you got another one?
I don't know. I don't know if I can come up with another
you
one.
You can't come up with another one?
Yeah.
That's great. Know.
I could come up with one, but I don't.
Do you play anything, John?
I don't. Duck calls.
He
duck
calls.
Turkey calls.
He played mandolin for
I
a little
did,
bit.
Yeah, it was kind of one of those deals.
He wanted to play banjo.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mom, if you're listening to this, yeah. I doubt it. But, you know, it was kind of one of those deals that was pushed on me when I wasn't ready for it,
yeah.
and I just kind of didn't like it too much. But I wish I could play the guitar.
Yeah.
I like to sing and, you know, make up my own words
yeah.
to stuff, you know, and tunes and stuff like that, so it's pretty neat. That's why I like Hawk and Horse mm-hmm. when he did that Arkansas Mule. That was neat, wasn't it?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think he released it today.
Well, he's releasing it on April 19th.
Okay, mm-hmm. I've got something.
Yeah,
that new one.
Well,
he's got
thank
out
you for
good,
thank
though.
You for playing. That
yes.
was awesome.
Yeah.
That was awesome. Thank you guys so much for coming.
Yeah. Hey, exactly. We got some gifts for you too.
Yeah.
Before,
okay.
Before
yeah.
we
yeah. say
turn
anything,
loose.
But
turn with
kind of
loose
waiting around
this
here.
Do you want to?
Mo, did
this
you?
This is for Misty.
Oh, that's for me.
Mo, did
yes.
you bring us any gifts?
Yeah, Mo, come
yeah,
on.
I brought
man.
You myself.
yeah. Gift enough in
you
itself.
You have to see me.
All right. I got
wow.
one of these for each of y'all. And I got one extra one
They're
for.
They're all unique. So.
For
okay.
Render Boy Brent.
For Render
since
Boy?
He didn't show up.
Yeah, he didn't show today.
Now, is this the one that incorporates the number?
This is. It's wrapped in paper.
Take a guess at what you think it is.
I can tell you what it is because I've made them.
Okay. Have you made these,
I know what it is. Holy cow.
Have you made...
What is
these,
it?
It's,
I'm pretty sure
limited
it is
edition
a
5 of 5.
Wing bone call. Holy
oh,
smokes.
That's awesome.
Wow. Very cool.
Episode.
Oh, look.
Dad gum.
Hand painted.
Look at his hand painted.
By Denny
yeah.
Lee.
Wow.
If I know this, I'd brought
That's
I'd brought
big
one of mine
time.
There we go.
Okay.
And now, so look on the other side of that.
It says
BP3.
How many
Black
Panthers
Panther
have you
3.
Seen?
That's the Yelp. No, Yelp's
wow.
game called
hey,
BP3.
Misty, that's a ton of work.
That sounds
good.
Oh, it does
like
sound
that.
Good. That sounds really good.
Man, that's
I'm
a lot
have to
of work, John.
On
thank you so
Absolutely.
Much.
Absolutely.
Wow. This is awesome,
so,
man.
Okay.
Misty, open yours.
Now, yeah, mine is,
we'll,
mine
we'll,
is
we'll
different.
Yelp while you do
yours
it.
Yours is
mine
related.
Is
that's
really
dude,
cool.
that's going to hang here in the office, man.
It's beautiful paper. Did you wrap this, Demi? Mm-hmm. You did good.
Thank you. I don't. I may have made it too.
I don't even know what to expect on this.
Yeah. kind of hard to get
really
that,
good.
Hard to get that cluck down, isn't it?
Do that.
You might have to cut it.
I'm not as good with
I got a pocket knife here if you need that.
It's probably not as hard as
an old man
as
showed
I'm
me how to make
look.
These back in the 70s.
That's neat, isn't it? I started doing them about 5 years ago.
Those are beautiful.
And so those are off of our 20.
What do we got?
Sweet. Look at this.
Oh, earrings. Turkey
beautiful.
Feather earrings.
Yeah.
And duck.
Did you make these? Wow. That's awesome.
Those are beautiful.
Oh, my goodness, Josh.
So that's the tail feathers of a mallard duck.
Of a mallard duck.
With the turkey, but then I had to throw in some.
Oh, man.
That's awesome.
Some mallard curls in there.
I'll kill a longbeard with this year.
But if you would, I'd appreciate it.
Hold them right out in front of me.
I'd be real happy for you if you did. I'd be happy for you anyways if you didn't use it. So yeah,
those are awesome to me. That's
if you want to use those,
so you
calls,
made these yourself. Mm-hmm. So you guys
great,
are just really
not,
crafty. In yeah. addition
hey,
to being
hang
incredible,
them up somewhere.
That's gonna be
Al Hooter. You're very
displayed
good at this
somewhere
kind of
prominent.
Stuff. This is
awesome.
Pretty awesome.
Look, John, yep. this call right here is my dad's old call.
That's neat.
That just ever since I was a little kid, my dad always had that one, and he showed us how to use it and everything, yep. and I nabbed it from him. Few years ago, and said that's going in the museum.
Yeah, so that it's a different
River's
sound in the woods.
Jealous.
You know, yeah. Something I was going to say when you were talking about that Al Hooten episode. I remember staying up late when David Letterman was on TV and listening to Preston Pittman.
Yeah,
and like two other guys he had on there doing the Goblin and stuff. And I remember thinking like I can do that.
Yeah,
you know, and so it's neat. I just kind of a
great.
Funny story. So.
Well,
yeah.
Thank you guys for coming. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we will see you next week.
I'm sure a lot of you guys remember the old ceremonial hunting tradition of eating the heart out of the first animal you kill. Meat from those organs are among the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. You can get those same benefits your ancestors craved via convenient daily capsules from Heart and Soil. Find out more at heartandsoil.co. And remember, use code MeatEater for 10% off your purchase.
Maui Nui is on a mission to help balance axis deer populations for the good of our environment, communities, and food systems. On the island of Maui, they've shared over 126,000 pounds of nutrient-dense protein with the Maui community. Secure your spot now. Become a snack subscriber and join in helping to build more resilient food and ecosystems on Maui. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's MauiNuiVenison.com. And use promo code BEAR for 20% off your first order.